Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome to Monday. This is First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a great show today because we had a great weekend of sports. The Celtics got booed off their own floor this weekend. Dak Prescott had some interesting comments about Tom Brady and his lovely wife. But we will start with a big showdown between the Lakers and the Sixers. Well, at least it was supposed to be. Turned out to be a big blowout between the two. Joel Embiid led the way for Philly with 37 points as the Sixers, boy, they just ran away with this 143-120. New addition Tobias Harris chipped in with 22 points. Watch out for the 76ers starting five. They looked good. The Lakers now back up to 500, 2.5 games out of the playoff picture. Here is LeBron after the loss.
We had too many breakdowns, way too many breakdowns. I mean, we scored the ball as well as you can score the ball, especially in that first quarter. But, we gave up too many pain points. We didn't keep the floor, shrunk and make many outside jumpers to begin the game. And once they start getting to the paint, then it kind of opened up everything else.
It's only been two games, but I think we got a chance. We got a lot to work on. Obviously, our whole offensive package hasn't been, used. We got a long way to go. But I think the potential we have, especially come playoff time, matching up with other teams, I think we got a chance and we got to keep working, keep getting better and learn how to play with each other.
All right, so, Nick, we'll get to the Sixers side of this, but I want to start with the Lakers. LeBron laid out a number of things that the team did not do well, in addition to their lack of defense in this game. Are you concerned with the team you see out there now? Because this is the team that we're going to have the rest of the way now. Are you concerned this team doesn't make the playoffs?
You can't dismiss it as a possibility. We're at the point in the season where you can start looking at the standings. You can start saying, okay, how many wins is it going to take to get the 8 seed, to get the 7 seed? And by my rough estimate, the Lakers got 10 losses to play with.
26 games left?
26 games left. They got 10 losses. I think they're going to have to get to 44-38 if they want to have any shot at the 7 seed. And that might be the minimum threshold just to get even the 8 seed. And so you look at their schedule, you look at what they have, and you say, okay, they should be able to get the 8 spot. They are going to have to play well to be able to get the 7 spot, but you can't look at a game like last night or yesterday afternoon where they play no defense whatsoever, where it's a 4-point game with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. LeBron goes to the bench, and when he comes back in 5.5 minutes later, they're down 20, and say this is a team that is playing the level of basketball it's going to need to be able to make sure they go 16-10 down the stretch. See, I know that they didn't have Lonzo, but that when he comes back, it's just going to add a little more uncertainty, even though he's a good player, to what are right now Luke Walton just throwing darts at a rotation. Reggie Bullock, you're new to the team. Why don't you start? Josh Hart, DNP coach's decision for any reason in particular? Not that I can tell. Like, they are.
He might have given him a chance to rest that knee. He's been struggling with the knee injury.
Sure.
Giving him a few games off, so he might have given him an extra couple days.
Right, and that's probably what the rationale is going to be, but I don't think they went into the game knowing Josh Hart's definitely not playing, and I don't know what the reason was why Reggie Bullock. It's one thing to start him because you want to add shooting, but for Reggie Bullock to get 30 minutes and Rondo to get 15 minutes when he was coming off the great performance against the Clippers, it just feels like, or against the Celtics, pardon me, it just feels like there's a lot of guessing going on, and we don't have a lot of time for guessing left in the season.
No, there's tremendous concerns, and it's based on those 18, 20 games LeBron James missed. When you take a quarter of the season with this young team, then you get to the end where now they got 25 games. So their margin of error, it's been sucked up in LeBron's absence. So what they can't do is they can't panic. What they can't do is right now is just continue to build on what they're doing, because Nick might have a goal that they need to reach the sixth spot, but they just need to get in the playoffs. And I thought it's very disappointing, because you would think after the Boston, that was a huge upset in being able to get that win there, that they would follow it up with a decent performance. And through 2.5 quarters, you thought, okay, they're right where they want to be. LeBron have a big push in the fourth quarter. It's anyone's game. But this is what we saw in Cleveland. LeBron goes to the bench. By the time he comes back in, yeah, the game, you can still win it, but you have to burn so much energy because of the deficit. So these young players that are very, very talented, that's the big difference in Cleveland. When LeBron went out, they just weren't that talented. They're still very, very talented. And at some point, you have to decide, and most teams do it, and we see it all the time with the Warriors, you have to put the intensity on the defensive end. And they just did not have that yesterday.
The defense was horrible. And to C's point about LeBron, this is one of the risks. LeBron very clearly, it seemed to me, especially with how well Kuzma was playing, was trying to moderate his workload, if you will, for a fourth quarter push.
Yeah, he wasted all that energy going to watch Zion playing. He didn't do nothing the night before. I mean, the evening before there in Virginia.
Right. So, I mean, he should be ready to go. But then when you've got something, an extra charge left for the fourth quarter, but then you're down 20 when you go in the game in the fourth quarter, you'd have been better off going all out early to try to give your
team
a lead.
They made a big push to try to get it to single digits.
Absolutely. And so like just like the Celtics game, there would have been some positives even if they had lost it, if Rondo didn't hit that shot. Let's say somehow in the fourth quarter the Lakers hit 8 threes and they win this game 145-143. Mm-hmm. There would still be enormous concerns in a win, because 120 points is supposed to be enough to at least be in the game. Like, Kyle Kuzma having 23 in the first quarter is supposed to be a game where it's like, all right, we're getting an outlier performance from our number two guy. These are games that if we don't win, they're at least close late. And the number of open threes and wide open just drives to the lane like it was an all-star game, the Lakers defense, which had been solid leading up to this game, they gave up. It looked like a team that was on 3 games in 4 nights off of back-to-back, and they weren't. They were rested. I know it's a road trip, but they were rested. There's no excuse for that.
There was one play where Joel Embiid literally just waltzed his way in. There was no one that even stopped him. So let's just talk about the other side of the ball. Let's talk about the 76ers. I mean, they had Tobias Harris there. I think it was his second game. They looked like it took them all of no time to figure out how to play together. They do have some issues, but how good is this starting five right now for the Sixers?
Well, let's just talk about their center. Joel Embiid's a special basketball player. Now, he's fulfilling all the prophecy that people said. Man, if he's able to stay healthy, they weren't able to say, oh, if he develops this, he already had all that. He could shoot a three. He's got a low post game, like a post player that we haven't seen. So everything starts in this NBA that's without centers or big men. Everything in Philly, to me, it starts with Joel Embiid. That's one of the biggest mismatches on any team facing the opposition. I don't care what team you put out there. You put Golden State Warriors, DeMarcus Cousins. Oh, he don't want no piece of him and what he can do. So, for me, their ability to have a dominant player, and it should be established off Joel Embiid. Man, Jimmy Butler is not the player Joel Embiid is. Ben Simmons is not the player. And if they start that way, if they run their offense through him, if they play transition, and then when they get to the half court, they go through Joel Embiid, to me, that's the way that they would scare the rest of the NBA. If they don't do that, which Joel Embiid, he talked about there in the soundbite, sometimes offensively, they're not structured. They had some problems. Jimmy Butler complained about the offense. So we know they're elite defensively because of the size, and they have 3 very good individual defenders. But from an offensive standpoint, go through Joel Embiid. When you're not in transition, go through Joel Embiid. That, to me, that's a special, special unit. That's a special team. And I wouldn't be wanting to face Joel Embiid.
No.
I want to play Giannis. I don't want to play Giannis. And I don't want to face Joel Embiid because I just believe in the playoffs, forget the whistle. Okay, Joel Embiid had 37 yesterday. 11 of 12 from the free throw line. So go ahead and foul him.
For Joel Embiid, of all the great true low post big men we've seen, one enormous edge he has is he's so physically imposing, but putting him to the free throw line is something Sixers are happy with. Like, that is something, it's not like, oh, yes, man, if he doesn't get the and
it's one, like two of the other great centers. Yes. Kareem, you couldn't foul him. Elijah Wan,
you couldn't foul them.
And that's what made them special. Not in the fourth quarter. Oh, if you foul them, you're automatically giving them points.
And one thing he's done so much better this year is something actually your brother pointed out a year and a half ago when we were eating with him, which is the NBA, the way it's officiated, they let the defender beat up on the big man in the half court. The one spot where the offensive big man has an edge is in that secondary transition. He could run down, get his spot on the block, and knock the hell out of whoever's on him. And they never call an offensive foul on that. Embiid got that coaching point this summer. Because he is, when he's running down the court in the secondary transition, he is burying his guy, basically shoving his guy out of bounds, and then reposting. Ben Simmons and others have been very good at seeing that, pitching it ahead, and that's a layup. So you also saw in this game, and you're going to see, the added spacing with Tobias Harris out there where he has more room to maneuver in the paint. He was spectacular yesterday, and the Lakers had no answer, but the reality is most teams don't have any answer for him.
One note, only James Harden is averaging more free throws right now than Joel Embiid.
Yep.
So, great for him. Time now for Put a Grade On. It's sponsored by CarMax. Speaking of Embiid, he had an excellent game. We mentioned it, 37 points in this Sixers win. Nick, go ahead and put a grade on Joel Embiid's night.
I'm not like CeCe. I don't do pluses and minuses, so I'm just going to give him an old school A.
There you go, man.
You're
getting better, man.
I don't know how you give him anything other than A plus if you're into that. He was great.
Yeah.
He was the best player on the court, and he was great on both ends. They had no answer for him whatsoever.
His intermediate game, too, is developing to be very, very special. He had some dream shakes about 12 to 15 feet away from the bucket. So special, special player. Looking forward to seeing how much better he's going to get.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, the Celtics got booed off their own floor. Next on FS1. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this. Get to the Celtics in a second, but first, Duke and Virginia. Zion is so good, but this was incredible. Watch him take off from so far away to block a three-point shot.
At this point in the game, Coach K had told him, don't give up any three-pointers. So he overcommitted to try to get the guy to drive. And Zion's like, I was trying to get him to drive. He wouldn't drive, so I had to swat it.
Look at where he is when the guy catches the ball. He's even with the rim. I understand it was a slow gather and a low pass. I get all that. This is unreal weak side help defense. I mean, he's in the lane when the guy catches the ball.
Lakers, Sixers, Joel Embiid fools the defense with an elaborate pump fake before driving.
All right, listen, Joel Embiid, a couple years ago, shot 37% from three. This year, down under 30%. You can't be going for these pump, make him shoot them. Make Joel Embiid if he wants to shoot a three, because if not, he's going to torture you like this, Tyson Chandler. That's a bad job.
Joel Embiid's got it all going. There's no defense for him. Yeah, that's a nice way to set it up, Nick. But he did hit a couple of these yesterday. That's all you need to hit as a seven-footer is a couple.
More from this game, Tobias Harris elevates over JaVale McGee for a nasty one-handed slam.
I was so glad to see that they got him involved in the offense because he's instant offense, but you got to give him the ball. Mm-hmm. And I was concerned with the ball. You only got one basketball, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, the second best offensive weapon the Sixers have behind Embiid.
The Alliance of American Football is here. It started strong. Mike Bercovici of the San Diego Fleet took an insane hit. It sent the quarterback, the ball, and his helmet flying in three different directions. He did return to the game, though.
They had their debut weekend this weekend. I don't think it was some great football, but this was one hell of a hit. They have one rule in this league. The way they do onside kicks, it's a 4th and 12 from your 28. That's how you do it. I think that's smart. People like this hit, though. I mean, this is obviously illegal in every other level of football. But
what happened to the safety measures? What happened to all these guys with concussions?
That doesn't exist in this new league's first weekend, evidently.
On to the Celtics now. It was not a great weekend for them. They blew a 28-point lead Saturday to the Clippers, causing their fans to boo them off the court. To make matters worse, Kyrie Irving left the game with a knee injury. He's listed as day-to-day. It seems like the Celtics' success is as well. Marcus Morris did not sugarcoat the issue.
It's not fun, man. Like, it's not fun. We're not competing at a high level. You know, even though we're winning, it's still not, it's just not fun. You know, I don't see the joy in the game. I watch all these other teams on the league, guys up on the bench, they're jumping on the court, they're doing all, you know, other stuff that this look like is they enjoying, you know, their teammates' success, they're enjoying everything, and they're playing together, and they're playing to win. And when I look at us, I just see a bunch of individuals. We got to play to win. That's sacrificing playing hard, that's sacrificing, you know, being a better teammate, that's sacrificing whatever it is, you know, we have to put it to the side. No one's getting traded, the trade deadline's over. We compete for a championship, and that's how we got to approach these games. We're going to lose a draw, man. We're going to lose games, but we don't have no attitude, we don't have no toughness, we ain't having fun, you know. It's going to be a long season.
Marcus Morris insinuating something needs to change down the stretch. What do you think it is if the Celtics are going to make the playoffs?
Well, and there was a number of people, as far as Brad Stevens, that had a tremendous amount of confidence in Brad Stevens as one of the elite coaches. I believe he's a very, very good coach, but I think that only time will tell if you're an elite coach. How much can you vary how you're going to play based on your talent? Can you win when you're less talented, which they did last year, which for Brad, that to me, that's what he normally did. That's what he did at Butler when he didn't have five-star recruits. He had a bunch of two-star, three-star guys. They played a great system. That's what got them to national prominence in college basketball. Last year, and how they do things, their out-of-bounds plays, their dead ball timeout, what happens in those things, and how they play defense. We gave Brad Stevens a lot of credit. I never said he was one of the best coaches, but I knew he was a good coach. Playing with a talented roster, what would he do? That was the question I had last year. What will he do when Gordon Hayward comes back and Kyrie Irving comes back? And now we're starting to see it. This team is not gelling. We saw Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum thrive last season during the playoffs. Now we have Kyrie back taking over the team, Gordon Hayward back, only a shell of himself. We don't see the team thriving because what they have not done is they're not going to sacrifice for their other teammates. That's why guys would come to work and not be happy. When you're not happy, it's not about shooting percentage. I need to work on my free throw. Man, we're not playing good defense. It's no. What they're telling me to do, I don't feel like is best for my game. Jaylen Brown, you could see it in him. Tatum, you can see it in his game. Kyrie, it's always been in his game. If you know Kyrie, you know the stories there. Him and Ty Lue, what they went through, what LeBron went through. Kyrie is about dribbling the basketball. He's the best dribbler of the basketball ever, and trying to take that away from him is not something someone's going to be able to do. So how they're going to play offensively, last year, Kyrie was out of the lineup. Kyrie's their worst defender. So now with him in the lineup, they're not. Their help defense is not necessarily the same. So guys aren't happy with their roles on the team. That's what makes coming to work not pleasant. And as a defensive team, this team is not sacrificing for their teammates trying to be elite on the defensive end.
And it's very difficult to ask guys at this point in their career to take a lesser role than they expect or they think they've earned. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier haven't been paid yet. They haven't been all-stars yet. They haven't established themselves yet. They thought, especially the first two, were trending towards that. And then you ask them to take a back seat. One of the guys you ask them to take a back seat for in Gordon Hayward is a guy we're 55 games in. They're all better than Gordon Hayward right now. That's got to be frustrating. The fact, from a coaching standpoint, these young guys are frustrated and complaining. But the biggest issue with Brown and Tatum, they're both down 7%. In three-point percentage from last year. Last year, Jaylen Brown was 39% from three. That's excellent. Now he's 32%. Last year, Tatum was 43% from three, one of the best in the league. Now he's 37%. So, like, their game has regressed somewhat. They're not happy with their role, and this is why that loss this weekend was so bad. They're up 28 the moment Kyrie hurts his knee. Now, thankfully for them, he's going to be okay. But if there was ever a moment for the young guys to try to say, see, look, we got this, you blow a 28-point lead in the final 30 minutes of the basketball game or 28 minutes of the basketball game, the moment Kyrie goes out. Any push and pull Kyrie has had with, guys, you need to listen to me, you need to follow me, it got further established when the team had a 40-point turnaround in the negative direction the moment he goes out of the basketball game.
Now, it's easy to blame it on all the other things. To me, young players, a lot of times, they think 1 + 1 = 2. Oh, we played well last year. We played well in the playoffs. In year number two, you know what I'm getting ready to do? I'm getting ready to give the league. I'm getting ready to handle the league. It doesn't always work out that way. And you can't blame that on the other players. Sometimes these younger players, that second year, third year, they don't grow as much as they thought because they thought the league was easier. They thought they had it figured out. So some of the problems that they have are in these young players because they're getting the minutes. It's not like Kyrie is shading their face when they're shooting. Right. You know, so we can blame it on those other things, but these younger players, regardless, I know this offseason, I know they were committed. They said they came back in better shape. Their game was in better shape, but it doesn't always equate to the numbers. Being a professional athlete is very, very hard. And these young players are starting to see in year number two, there's a lot more to the game that I have to figure out that I thought I had figured out in year number one.
Is there something to the fact that, look, last year when Kyrie went out, the team figured out how to play without him, changed up their game a little bit into more of Brad Stevens' system type of basketball and not really Kyrie going out there and doing his thing and everyone else were supporting cast members, and they flourished and they did pretty well. Is there something to the fact that maybe the young players aren't all growing when he's out on the court?
Listen, Kyrie, to his credit, after a really horrific start to the season, first 2 weeks, he's playing the best basketball of his career.
He is.
He couldn't be an All-NBA member this year. He's averaging a career high in assists. What he's been doing over the last 6 weeks has been
extraordinary. It's definitely his best basketball as a Celtic.
And I think you can argue this is going to end up at the end of the year be his best year of his career, start to finish. Like, we'll see how the numbers look out, and we'll see how, because he has such a bigger responsibility now than in the years they were good in Cleveland when LeBron took on the lion's share of the load. But the other thing, listen, you are, at this point in the season, unless you have had a major injury to a key member of your team that changed it, you are about what your record says you are. And the Celtics all year long have been fourth or fifth in the Eastern Conference. And when we talk about how great they were last year, there's one way to look at it, one game away from the NBA Finals. Another way is one game away from being bounced in the first round. Like the three games against Philly that went down to the wire, losing to up 3-2 against the Cavs with Kevin Love out and losing both those games, including one on your home court. They have not figured out how all these puzzle pieces fit together. And even though Kyrie and Al Horford, I think, have done what is expected of them, the other pieces, and Marcus Morris having a career year, all the advanced numbers say they should be better than they are. But their win-loss record, 56 games in, says they're an above-average team. And that's what they are, an above-average team right now.
Last year, they figured out, though, how to all play together, didn't they, after Kyrie went down?
But they had been all – I think it's easier to figure it out when you're just saying, hey, guys, you were getting 18 minutes. Now you're getting 22 minutes. I think the reverse is what's more difficult.
I think the surprise that they're not better, because both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they can do more things. They can dribble better. I guarantee you in their workouts, they can shoot better. I guarantee you they can go other places on the court that they're more comfortable. But it's not transferring over to the game. I'm just not going to blame Kyrie. All right? They're just not having a great year. If Kyrie was not having a great year, then I could see, okay, well, let's blame him. I believe that the system that Brad is trying to run, when you have talented players, there's less freelancing in that system. And these guys have not thrived unless it's a structured system, which they had last year during the playoffs.
All right, we'll take a break. Switch gears a little. Talk some football. Does Dak Prescott deserve to be paid more than Tom Brady?
Yeah,
that's next on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. All right, let's move on to a great matchup from Saturday night. Rockets.
Hate to see it.
And Thunder picked this up in the fourth quarter. Paul George hitting the three. He had 45 on the night less than a minute ago. Now James Harden hits the runner. That puts the Rockets up one. Harden with 42. Next possession, this is Russell Westbrook. He will make the layup, brings the Thunder up one. Westbrook, 9 triple-doubles in a row. That ties an NBA record. Harden tries to give the Rockets the lead. Cannot make it. Thunder come back from being down 26 points. They win 117-112. Chris Carter, which of these two teams is the bigger threat to the Warriors in the West?
Ooh, man, this is difficult. I mean, this is difficult. And it's difficult for me because of one player, and that's Paul George. I just been so mesmerized by how well he plays. He's the best dual player in the NBA. Both sides of the court. No NBA player do we see picking up guys at half court, elite players like Harden, that he's able to guard them in the half court. His ability to be able to shoot the three. Clearly, he knows his role playing opposite of Russ and is very, very excited to be able to keep his career going there. I mean, that decision that he made with the basketball that he's playing now, to me, it's one of the most exciting things to go that are going on in the NBA. If I had an all-NBA team, Paul George is on first all-NBA right now.
Right now, he and Giannis.
Yeah, he should be in the conversation. If we weren't having these record-breaking what Harden was doing and what some other people, what Giannis is doing, Paul George, to me, is right there in the conversation of the most impressive season.
And when you mention first-team All-NBA, the reason I say he and Giannis is LeBron is on a nearly unprecedented streak of consecutive first-team All-NBA at the forward spot. And with 26 games to go, it looks like that's going to get snapped. Like, maybe it won't, but it's
hard. Me and Dusty are working on a list. We might come up with, like, a Chris list at the All-Star break, All-NBA. Or one time we come up with a list.
And so, but Paul George, what is so impressive to me is at a point in your career where your goal is typically to maintain, or I'll become a little bit of a better shooter because my athleticism is going down a bit, he is playing the best basketball of his life. He's never averaged more than 24 a game. Not in Indiana, not in his first year with OKC. He's averaging 28 points per game. So to answer your question, which of these two teams could be the bigger threat? I believe it would be Oklahoma City for this reason and this reason only. You only need Russ to catch fire for a week. Like, they are doing what they're doing while Russell Westbrook is having a historically inefficient shooting season as far as the number of threes he shoots, shooting under 30%, and shooting 65% from the line. His MVP year, he was a fine three-point shooter. He was a very good free-throw shooter, as he had been his whole career. If for 10 days in the playoffs, that Russ comes back, because we know the rebounding, passing, and intensity is going to be there, then they can be a very hard out. But credit to Russ also for ceding control of the team to Paul George. And Paul George sees that, which is why in his post-game press conferences, he always brings up Russ. He's like, listen, we all feed off Russ's energy. He gives it back to Russ publicly because in the game, he is what everything revolves around for this team.
So we know that whether Russ is having an up year or down year, Russ is going to be there strong. And you know that Harden's going to be there strong. How much of between these two teams the success is going to come down to their second star, the Paul George or the Chris Paul, helping out these two superstars?
Well, I think the stars have something to do with it. But now we're talking about who they're going to be playing. It's about Golden State. Man, that second guy ain't no good. Your third guy ain't no good. Fourth guy ain't no good. In the matchups, it's those role players. To be able to match Golden State with Boogie Cousins, going to have 40 games under his belt. Like, he's going to be rolling. Draymond is shooting the ball better. Klay's had a good year after a slow start. KD can turn it on whenever he wants. Steph has been amazing. Like, it doesn't even come down to those second, third players now because it's a different NBA. Man, we need who's going to come off the bench to be able to give you those critical 15 to 20 minutes because, man, this is an NBA that we have never seen that, man, your second guy. Right. I mean, how important is it? He's important, but based on the depth of what Golden State can do to you, it's deeper.
To your point, like, let's just say Paul George X's out KD and Russ X's out Steph.
Yeah.
Then you still have Klay and then Boogie. And so the question is, like, can Jeremy Grant play the series of his life? What can you get from Nerlens Noel off the bench? Where I'll give OKC credit is when they moved on from Melo, They could have just said, we're trying to save money. Instead, they brought a more than competent player back for in the Melo transaction in Dennis Schroeder. Dennis Schroeder gives them a legitimate backup point guard who's been one of the others that you're talking about. But I don't look at Russ as their top guy. I think Russ is maybe the lead guy on the marquee.
Paul
but
George's?
On the court, Paul George is their best player.
Quickly, who would be an MVP with these two guys?
It's Harden 1, Giannis 2, Paul George 3, and it's a pretty clear. We could show, if we have time real quick, their numbers. Like, it's tough to make a case for Paul George in comparison to the other guys. Like, of the three, Giannis has him crushed in rebounds. They both have him crushed in assists. Giannis has the far better record, and Harden has him crushed in points. Like, Paul George having a great year,
yeah.
And first-team All-NBA will be a hell of an award for him. Very, very hard to make the MVP case for.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Cowboys, they've got a number of decisions to make this offseason, most notably whether or not to extend quarterback Dak Prescott. Prescott said he doesn't want to do a team-friendly deal, a la Tom Brady, saying he expects the Cowboys to, quote, pay what's deserved. He elaborated, saying nobody's wife makes as much money as his does either. When Tom Brady isn't the breadwinner in the home, then that's a great problem to have. So in that case, he can do that. He can do this contract however you want to do it. All right, CeCe, what are your thoughts on Dak Prescott's comments?
Yeah, first of all, I believe if Tom Brady, even if he wasn't married who he's married to and she was making the money, I don't believe he'd be one of the top paid quarterbacks because that's the way Bill Belichick does business. It's the way he's always done it. Look at their roster. Look at the rest of their starters. Outside of Stephon Gilmore, tell me a guy that's one of the top five at his position.
Hey.
All right? Gronk wanted more money. They put it in incentives, all right? That's how they normally make you earn your money. So I think Dak, it's a conversation, and people like to mention it. But when you look at New England, how they do their books wouldn't be that much different if Tom Brady was single. This is what they do. They value the contracts. They are not going to pay aging veterans. They're not going to give guys long-term contracts and guarantees. So for me, yeah, I know it probably sounded nice and everything, but as far as Jerry Jones got to pay Dak. And it's based on how they do things economically, how they do things in New England. That's why Brandon Cooks got traded. It wasn't because he couldn't play. It's because he was up for a new contract. And we've seen that with other players, Chandler Jones and others. So for me, Tom Brady, yeah, it sounds cute to be able to mention his wife and the amount of money that she makes. But the way New England does business, no one is getting their value on the open market.
It's the way New England does business, and it speaks to what Brady has placed value on. Brady has decided, I'm going to be defined first and foremost by rings and longevity. And so the way he has allowed his contract to be structured has given them the best chance to stay as competitive as possible because he's eating up 50% of the cap space he would on a typical team. And when you say you want to play to your 45 and you don't know, when he signed this last deal, he didn't know he was about to win league MVP. It's a lot easier. If you have a bit of a down year and it looks like maybe I could be replaced, it's a lot easier to have your case be made when you're not a $28 million a year quarterback. Now, Dak should be careful for a couple reasons. One, I was shocked he brought up Brady's wife. Like, you almost never hear
you
a
know
player.
I was shocked. Nor did I like it.
Listen, I know we talk about that on TV in the frame of his wife makes a lot of money. And even when we do that, and I'm one of the people that does it, I always wonder, I'm like, how does that sit with Tom Brady? But it's not really my job to worry about how it sits with Tom Brady. It's to educate people, right? But for Dak, for one of the brothers to say, one of the brotherhood to say, he's not the breadwinner in his family, that was... I bet someone will say to him, you probably shouldn't say that publicly, even if it's what you think. But the other reason Dak should be careful is he says, I want to get paid what I deserve. Well, right now what you probably deserve is, for the majority of teams, go ahead and play the fourth year and let's see. Go ahead, before
in
we split
sports,
you off.
You can very seldom say what you deserve, all right? Kirk Cousins got a number out there. You know, what you need to get is what someone will pay you. That's your value. Regardless of what you think, what the market... Like, what Dallas will pay you, that's what Dak should – that's his overall value. I think Dak is just – he's new at this, and you can tell through this interview. He said a lot of things that he made him look very, very green.
That being said, what we know about Jerry Jones, will Dak Prescott be the highest-paid quarterback in the league?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
No, but he'll be.
Why should he be?
No, he'll get what he's making $1 million a year. He's going to be around that $25 million a year range. And Dak knows Amari's about to get paid. Zeke's probably about to get paid. He wants to get paid as well. But when he says what I deserve, I think there's a lot of teams that would say, Dak, we're very happy with what you showed at the second half of last year. We're excited to see you in year four,
yes,
knowing they have the franchise tag to hold over him. Like, he's lucky he's on the Cowboys, one of the only teams, and Jerry Jones, one of the only owners, I think, that would be in a rush to pay him.
Yeah, and I'm going to give Dak credit, because typically people are a little more self-aware in this day and age. Not everyone, Jenna, but some people are a little more. So I'm going to give him credit. He realized wearing that star, being the Dallas Cowboy quarterback, what it means. And I'm sure he wants less than what the market will get, just so he can stay there with Zeke, with Amari Cooper, that big offensive line, all those things to benefit his career.
Sure, he's got a great situation there moving forward. Take a break. Coming up, back to basketball. Could the Sixers be the best team in the NBA? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, NBA champ Antoine Walker joins the show.
Good to see you.
Boy, Antoine, we got lots of questions. Great storylines in the NBA right now. Let's start with the big showdown Sunday between the Lakers and the Sixers. I mean, it was billed as such. Turned out to be a big blowout between the two. Joel Embiid did lead the way for the Sixers with 37 points. Sixers just blowing out the Lakers, 143-120. New addition, Tobias Harris, chipped in with 22 points. This is going to be a great starting five. To say Joel Embiid sees the potential on this team now would be an understatement. Take a listen.
It's only been two games, but I think we got a chance. We got a lot to work on, obviously. Our whole offensive package hasn't been, you know, used. We got a long way to go. I think the potential we have, especially come playoff time, matching up with other teams, I think we got a chance, and we got to keep walking, keep getting better, and learn how to play with each other.
Oh, I think he knows they've got more than just a chance once this all locks in. Are the new-look Sixers, Antoine, looking like contenders now?
Definitely. I think that they have the second-best starting lineup in the NBA behind Golden State. When you think about from top to bottom, to be able to switch multiple guys that can play multiple positions, I think it's the second best, hands down, not even close, behind Golden State. They are the best team in the East. I know it's going to take some time, but I think they are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. Can they get to Golden State? That's going to take some time. I mean, they will have to play like they played yesterday. 33 assists, make 12 threes.
Never turn the ball over.
Play a team that plays no defense.
Yes. So it'll be a different story playing Golden State. But in the East right now, the way they're constructed, if they just everybody's willing to be disciplined and figure it out and not fight over shots, I don't see nobody beating them in the East.
I think their own personal confidence, too, in the head-to-head, and when they played Golden State recently, that confidence and adding these new players. So they weren't even as good a team then. When they defeated Golden State in on the West Coast, and then now they're a whole new team. I do like their starting lineup. It is a lot better. And with J.J. Redick, when you have Ben Simmons at the point guard and Tobias, when you have Tobias Harris in there, you can hide J.J. Redick more. You can't hardly hide him that often, but you can hide him on the defensive end. And I just believe Tobias Harris, if utilized the right way, because I don't know what the coach – I don't know how good he's going to be, because last year in the playoff series, I was not impressed with the coach. Jimmy Butler has talked about their offense not having a type of flow to it. So how's the offense going to evolve as they go down the stretch? I like them playing at pace. And then when they do slow it down, it needs to go through Joel Embiid. If they're going to do that, I have a lot more confidence moving forward, Nick, than previously.
And Jimmy Butler and his personality can be an X factor here. And for the Sixers to reach their full potential, somebody needs to get to Jimmy Butler and say, listen, man, here's your role on this team. The last 2 minutes of the game are yours. The other 46, it's free-flowing. Embiid's going to be the focal point, but you Ben, Tobias, and JJ, it's going to be good shot, great shot for you guys. And for Ben Simmons, good shot layup, right? Like, his shot's not a part of it. If Jimmy Butler can accept that his role is closer, his role is if a possession breaks down, you need someone who can get an isolation bucket. I know Tobias Harris can. I think Jimmy Butler's better at that, and I think that is the way to make him happy with his role. Then they are the most dangerous team in the East. Because here's the one thing about Milwaukee, and it's why I'm so interested in watching them come playoff time. When you've got 2 weeks to drill down on Giannis, when he's the only guy you have to, when you can build your entire game plan for a couple weeks about slowing him down, then in the playoffs, how much will his lack of a jump shot hurt him? And how much will it change what has been the best team in the league through 55 games, the Milwaukee Bucks? Because Philly no longer has that issue. Philly, it's not, well, if we take Ben Simmons away, like in last year's playoffs. You know what? We're going to play Ben Simmons like he's a dead duck, and what can they do? They didn't have Jimmy Butler. They didn't have Tobias Harris. Mm-hmm. They were living and dying with whether or not Bellinelli and Ilyasova were hitting shots. They are so much better equipped for that this year that I think Philly is the only team in the East that could put a real scare in Golden State. Now, I don't know that they'll get there, but if they do, they're the only one I think built that could actually scare them.
To touch on the Jimmy part, I think when you think about Jimmy Butler, I think he's humble. He didn't make the All-Star team. I think he's humble now.
Okay.
I think he's humble now. He understands that he's going to have to play a role. I think for Jimmy Butler, he's got to get back to being a defensive player. We seen him a couple years ago.
Absolutely.
Locking in. Last night, he took 10 shots. He didn't take a lot of shots. I thought he was very efficient. I thought he stayed engaged in the game. He has to get back to doing what he does well, and that's guarding. You got other guys that can score the basketball, and he is their closer.
Right.
He's the guy I want the ball in, you know, with 2 minutes to go in the game. He can make a big shot. He can put his body on somebody, get to the foul line. And then you think about with Milwaukee is different. I think you're getting a seven-game series. I still don't trust Milwaukee. I know they're having a great season. Giannis can be guarded in a seven-game series because now you're going to force him to be a jump shot shooter. I mean, you watch
that's
him play
the concern.
Now. Yeah,
he's that's the force. Concern.
And I don't know if they address that issue in adding enough three-point shooters around Giannis moving forward when you get in the playoffs. But they're having a great season. But I think Jimmy Butler is going to be humble. Now, I mean, I think, you know, he didn't make the – Victor Oladipo was hurt, and he still didn't get voted in.
Right.
You know, so he's probably humbled now. He's probably started thinking about his contract.
Point.
He went from a max player. I don't think he's a max player anymore. He's a guy probably now looking at a little under the max. He's probably not going to get the max money that he thought he was going to get in the free agent market unless the Knicks or Brooklyn, somebody panics.
Sure.
You know, and sign him to big money, but I think he's humble.
If you listen to what Joel Embiid said, he keeps mentioning if we can make this work, if we can get us, we can all on the same page, if we can all play together. Your brother was a coach. You were a player. When you're inside an NBA locker room, there aren't that many guys. Is it more on the players to figure out how to gel, or is it the coach that's going to step in and say, okay, this is our team going down the stretch. Like, we have to figure it out. Where does that land?
I can only take you back to 06 when we played and you had a bunch of personalities in there. One thing that was great about us, we necessarily had a great season. Chris, you was down and we played. We didn't have the best season. I think we won like 52 games.
Talking about in Miami.
So we won like 52 games. But we had a great locker room. We had this slogan called 15 Strong, where we would just put these cards down. We was together as a team. And people may not think this matters, but off the court, us being together tight made for better play come playoff time. And the whole goal was to win the NBA title. So I don't know if that's their goal.
Absolutely. That's a great point there. You are right. That Miami team, they did gel. And when you have players, Tobias Harris looking for a contract, this is the first time. He's been on five teams. This is the first time an NBA team said, you know something? You're part of our future. And you could see that in his few games. He is plenty comfortable. He's the second best scorer that they have out there on the court. Jimmy Butler, he was a max player. He's been an all-star. All these things, is he willing to sacrifice coming down the stretch? And Ben Simmons, what is his game in the playoff? If y'all think they can play Giannis, how y'all think they're going to be able to guard Ben? I mean, how they're going to have to play, there's a lot of sacrifice from the coaching staff and from the players. But these star players, especially Tobias and Jimmy Butler, they're looking for a new contract. So winning to them, is it first? Winning was first priority for all 15 of those players.
No question.
Will it be first for the Sixers? That's a huge question.
And that is the only question. The only reason they wouldn't make it out of the East with as good as Milwaukee's been, or at the very least be in the Eastern Conference Finals in a slugfest with Milwaukee, is if, to quote Pat Riley, the disease of more gets to them. is if they don't, this would be the perfect NBA 2K team. Because there ain't no egos. Everyone knows their role. JJ knows when he's going to get his shots. Jimmy knows what he's supposed to do. Tobias, all those guys. But if all of a sudden Joel feels like, man, I'm not getting featured enough, or Ben feels like, man, just being a facilitator, rebounder, defender, I want to show I'm more than that, or Jimmy worries about getting the max, or Tobias worries, they said they're going to give me the max, but if I was averaging 21. Now I'm down to 14. We know JJ's happy to be there and is very comfortable in his role, knows exactly what that role is. But if they can take a page out of Golden State's book, which has been, man, the numbers don't matter, the wins do. We all get paid. We all eat if we win a championship at the end. Then this will be the second best team in basketball. But this also could be a team that gets down 2-1 in the second round and you hear one of their star players gripe at the other one. You say, man, what a disappointing run for Philly. It's all about the personalities because the talent is undeniable at this point.
Could you see what's happening in Boston right now, which is what they're hoping doesn't happen in Philly? Antoine, stick around. Coming up, could Paul George be playing his way into the MVP conversation? Next on First Things First. Check us out tomorrow. Super Bowl champ Stephon Gilmore joins the show. It's Tuesday on First Things First. Got a lot of questions for Stephon. It'll be nice to have him here.
Absolutely. He was best defensive player on the Pats all year long.
It's one of my kids.
Back here with Antoine Walker. We're talking Rockets and Thunder. Didn't look like a great game when the Thunder found themselves down 26, but came all the way back fourth quarter. Paul George hits the three. He had 45 on the night. Less than a minute to go. James Harden hit the runner to put the Rockets up one. He had 42. Next possession, Russ makes the layup. Thunder up one. Westbrook, 9 triple-doubles in a row. That ties the NBA record. Harden tried to give the Rockets the lead. It does not fall. Thunder overcoming their largest deficit this season. They go on to win 117-112. Antoine, let me start with you. Who do you think is the bigger threat to the Warriors? Would it be the Thunder or the Rockets?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I have to go with the Rockets, and I'm just because of the offensive show that James Harden is putting on this year. I just think, you know, he's at an unprecedented level on the offensive end. He's mastered the way to score under these new rules, be able to get to the foul line. I think Chris Paul, if he can stay healthy coming towards the end of the season, he's got a lot of rest.
Come on. I know they say this in Chicago, just like they do in where I'm from. If was a fifth, we all be drunk. That Chris Paul, man, that's a big if.
That's
now.
A big if, but I also like the addition of Amon Shumpert. He reminds me a little bit of Trevor Ariza, a guy that can guard. He can make an open three. Mm-hmm. You add that guy. I like him better than Gerald Grant. Yeah. And then Eric Gordon, too. You also had him. And then you can't take a lot from this game because Clint Capella was not playing.
Correct.
You know, so that's why I'm looking at. So I like Houston as a bigger threat than anybody because they're able to score the basketball at a very high level.
The case for the Thunder, to me, is a very simple one. Paul George, we have less of a reason to believe Paul George's play is going to change in the postseason than James Harden's. Harden, first of all, at some point he's going to stop averaging 42, like he's been averaging since December 13th. So let's assume he gets back to a regular 35 a night. There is reason to believe he's not going to get as many calls in the playoffs, that the teams are going to try to trap him at midcourt, force the ball out of his hands, as we've seen in the past, and that Paul George's game is more transferable to the postseason. But the other reason that you can make the case for Oklahoma City is, can Russell Westbrook play like he did 2 years ago for 2 weeks in the postseason? That's the question. Like, can Russell Westbrook get back to that level
Russ
of play?
Russ is my guy. I love Russ. I think he's, you know, arguably, you know, a lot of people argue me. I like him as the best point guard because he brings it every night. But the thing with Russ, he's not efficient enough for me this year.
Yes.
His offensive game is not polished like it was 2 years ago.
Well, that's my
point. That's what bothers me
about
him.
I totally agree, which is what the only way they would be in the discussion is if a guy that 2 years ago shot 85% from the free throw line and this year shooting 66 gets back to that. If a guy who 2 years ago shot 35% from three and this year is at 29% gets back to that. He has to for them to be a real threat out west.
Yeah, outside of Steph Curry and Clay, y'all tell me just honestly, who you going to appropriate any type of faith to shooting under 25% from three? Like, seriously, like who? Like, because y'all can't be just sitting there and be like, oh, man, for 2 weeks, Russ can't hit a shot now.
He can't hit.
He's shooting under 25%. Even in the big comeback, man, he took a couple shots he shouldn't took. So, for me, if he gets hot, you know what that's going to affect? It's going to affect Paul George. because he's been deferring to Paul George. He's been passing off the a lot of them shots. He's been faking like he's going to take them, and he's been giving to Paul George, and Paul George has been – that's why they've won 10 out of the last 11.
Well, they're not deep enough. Let's be honest. They're not deep enough to beat a Golden State team in a seven-game series because now you got to rely on the role players. I don't know how good – OKC role players is going to be. I mean, I like Dennis Schroeder. I think that's a great pickup.
Yes.
But then, you know, Steven Adams is going to be solid. But then where you go after that?
Well, that's the thing about the point guard. When Russ is playing like he is now, it's not the numbers. He makes those other players so much better. That's why he is a triple-double waiting to happen. It's not about his three-point shooting. Now, as a floor general, Russ knows how to run a team. So if y'all tell me Russ is going to keep this back seat, I would have more faith in him that way compared to if he catches fire, it's going to have a negative effect. Those other role players aren't as good because Russ is getting them into the paint and dishing out purposely to open up the court for those other players.
We spent an earlier part of the show talking about how good Paul George has been and how good Paul George has been for the Thunder. We know how good Harden is. Would you pit these two together? Who would win MVP between the two?
I think right now MVP is a two-man race with Paul George a very clear third.
Okay.
I think that Harden is having the most individually spectacular season of anybody and one of the most individually spectacular seasons we've seen in modern NBA history on the offensive end. The reason it's a two-man race, despite that, and we can show it if you want, is Giannis has the one thing that has always been the MVP tiebreaker, overwhelming team success. They're going to win 60 games. It's not like his numbers are bad now. 27, 12, and 5, like that is on a very short list along with Anthony Davis and Kareem for centers that have put up slash lines like that. But if you're either going to give it to the guy who's been great on an amazing team in Milwaukee or the individual success, Paul George to me doesn't check either box.
Now, Paul George, there is a storyline. We all saw that horrific injury. We see what Gordon Hayward is doing in Boston with that same type of injury. So I think it's baked in there. We can't remove that scar of seeing that, man, because we hadn't seen a basketball player get injured like that and see him now getting 28. But for James Harden, to his credit, he has two seasons, forget this season, that are better than the way Paul George is playing. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget when he got robbed of being an MVP a couple times. So, yeah, Paul George is playing great. Harden is the only one in that conversation if it's between those two. But we know it's between him and Giannis.
Yeah, I think it's Giannis. I think Paul George is third. He's having a great year. Unfortunately, these guys are having better years because now Giannis has got the wins.
You think Giannis over Harden?
Yes, I think Giannis over Harden. I just think when you look at Milwaukee Bucks roster, I mean, obviously, we know they're a new coach. They play a different style. But there's other guys on that team that they're not very – Milwaukee, even though they got the best record, I'm not scared of them come playoff time. I don't think they're better than Toronto. I don't think they're better than Boston. I don't think they're better than Philly come playoff time. I like them during the season. They've been great. Giannis has been unbelievable. But I think Giannis, the season that he's having, to be able to win at the level that they're winning at right now, he deserves MVP. James Harden, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I enjoy watching him play. He's one of the great offensive talents. But I believe what he's doing right now, it's tough when you dribble it 20 times. You take a lot of, you know, you're going 5-for-19 for three sometime. It's tough to give a guy like that MVP.
Listen,
I know they squeaked out some wins.
People bring up the he went 5-for-20 from three. For all the times people bring up these bad shooting three-point shooting nights, he's shooting 38% on the year. So he must have some good three-point shooting nights to go along with it. Now, in Giannis's favor, which none of us have mentioned, he might be the best defensive player on the number one ranked defense in basketball. And so that doesn't show up in those stats I showed you. Is Giannis's defense, why are the Bucks have the best record in the league? Yeah, they got a top five offense. Mm-hmm. But they have the number one defense
in the league.
Number one
defense and number two as far as shooting threes per game. People don't look at Milwaukee as, whoa, really? Outside of Golden State, they're hitting the second most threes. So that's that new style that you're talking about that has definitely led to.
Chris Middleton's an all-star. Eric Bledsoe's played up to his level this year. So he's got the guys to step up. But I like Giannis this year for MVP.
When Harden's averaging 37-7-8 for the year, 37-7-8, and Giannis is in the discussion, it speaks to how good he's been. I don't think it's over yet. I don't think Harden's won the thing yet, but it would be shocking if the MVP is anyone other than Harden or Giannis, no matter how great Paul George has been.
All right, Antoine, we'll see you later on in the show. Coming up, Danny Ainge. Oh, there's more. Is Danny Ainge right about Kyrie and the Celtics getting married? That's a discussion. That's next on First Things First.
First of all, Danny Ainge trying to steal my line. Second of all, Jenna, you said you were done with Danny Ainge.
Done with Danny Ainge? I didn't know there was more. No, there was nothing else in the prompter.
I'm looking at the same prompter.
And then all those words came up.
Jenna will keep that number, though, just in case.
In 6 days, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicks off the 2019 NASCAR season. You know it does. It is Sunday at 2:30 Eastern with the pregame beginning at 1 only on Fox. All right, we'll get to the Celtics in just a second. But first, Duke, Virginia, and Zion. What? Incredible. Takes off from so far away to block a three-point shot into the crowd.
I mean, he is at the midpoint of the lane when the Virginia player catches this basketball. I know it's a slow gather and a bad pass. I get all of that. But Zion might be the only human being alive that can block this shot, given where it was caught.
How much does he weigh, Nick?
Given he's listed at 285. Once he gets on an NBA strength and conditioning and nutrition program, my goodness. Oh, I don't know if it'll be less. He doesn't
Lakers
need to weigh less.
And Sixers watch Joel Embiid fool the defense, the elaborate pump fake before driving in for the two-handed slam.
See, that's what happens when you have that athletic butt that I have. See, my wires got caught on my athletic butt. I was doing a squat, and then my sound. That's why I wasn't in those last two highlights. This is not about Joel Embiid. This is about me being athletic
Chris
at this stage
out
of my life.
That is one way
to I got
describe.
Muted. Y'all tried to mute me.
Yeah, that's or you just got out here late. You're out there bobbing and weaving in the hallway.
Yeah.
Almost missed the segment.
Yeah, I got a little more back there than I'm used to.
Joel Embiid.
Oh, the Alliance of American Football is where it started strong. Mike Bercovici, the San Diego Fleet, took an insane hit right here. It sent the quarterback, it sent the ball, it sent the helmet flying in three different directions.
Now, if this happened to be in the NFL, I don't see him playing in the league before 2021. That's the type of suspension he would get.
Every part of this looks like from like an Any Given Sunday type of movie. The jersey, the field, the almost
the logos,
the cinematic type of hit. Yeah. This was the biggest play of the weekend. They had four games this weekend.
Oh, this went viral. You saw this everywhere.
Yeah, they can only rush five guys, people.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. You can't blitz in the league. They're not publicizing that part of the league.
Moving on to the Celtics now, coming off two terrible losses, one to the Lakers, one to the Clippers. Maybe it's an L.A. thing. There's been tension in the locker room as a result, and hanging over management's head, Kyrie Irving's long-term plans. He said in the offseason he wanted to sign with Boston moving forward, but it looks more and more like that's not set in stone. Here's Danny Ainge on the Celtics' long-term relationship with Kyrie Irving.
I think a lot of people, because of Kyrie's announcement at the beginning of the year, thought that there was a marriage. I think that it's more like an engagement, and we're going to get married on July 1st. And I think that that engagement is still on. As far as I know, in my individual conversations with Kyrie, we're still engaged, but we really can't, you know, make those vows, sign that contract until July 1st.
See? What are you thinking?
Well, you actually, when you get engaged, you actually kind of make the vows. That's why people actually go through with the wedding. You don't sit there waiting on the wedding day and say, you know, I wonder what she thinks. I wonder what he thinks. Typically, along the way, with the courtship, with the engagement is...
There's not supposed to be a lot of suspense in is the wedding happening.
Right, yeah.
That's usually a bad sign.
Right. Yeah, I've been engaged a couple times. Nick, I think you've been engaged once, right?
Been engaged once.
Yeah, but, Nick, when you first got engaged... Uh-huh. Did you think you were not just rushed a little bit? Was not life coming at you very, very fast? And you felt like at this time, I better get engaged to this young lady. If not, I could potentially lose her. Is that not right?
All right,
Answer the question. Yes or no. Yes or no, Nick.
That is accurate. But I had no question that the wedding was gonna take place. No,
right.
It was just maybe on a quicker time.
Right. Okay, now also, Nick, right? Now just I believe this is important.
Uh-huh.
Also, Nick. Right, I need you to answer these questions yes or no, because you're going through your 5 minutes.
Counselor.
You're running through my 5 minutes
Absolutely.
Of time. Did you put your best foot forward as far as your engagement ring, Nick Wright?
Yeah, I tried to, given the circumstances, yes.
Nick Wright? Do I have to have a blind reveal?
Person.
Nick, do a blind reveal? Nick, share your engagement story. Did you put your best foot forward, Nick? Did you do what you had to do?
I did what I had to do.
That's exactly what Danny Ainge is doing right now. Okay. Later on, we'll go to the Bills. Yeah, we'll go to Harlem this weekend, have a couple of drinks with Nick. He'll tell us that whole story. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people say what they have to say, do what they have to do, so that they can try to win someone over. That's what Danny Ainge has got to say. Kyrie is saying all the right stuff, but Kyrie could have let him off the hook. He could have let him know, man, you guys can show up at the wedding. Man, I'm paying for everything. It's going to be open bar. Right. We're going to have the best of everything. No, he didn't. He said, hey, man, you come to the wedding, you might be paying for this yourself. Or I might not be there.
I might not be there. And we joke about Danny Ainge and Jenna's bitterness about him not following her on Twitter. I found out this weekend Danny Ainge must follow me on Twitter. Maybe some burner account or whatever. The official Danny Ainge doesn't, because can we show my tweet from the day after Kyrie's announcement? Congrats to Kyrie and the Celtics on their engagement. For the health and well-being of sports fans of Boston, I hope the wedding actually takes place on July 1st, 2019. I sent that on October 4th, the day after Kyrie did his big, or the day he did his big announcement, right when it happened. This has always been an engagement, and it's been a loose engagement. And because the thing is this, when people, if we're going to use the engaged analogy further, they don't get married the next day is because a wedding has to be planned. Because a wedding, like, there's time, right? Kyrie didn't sign the next day because there's money involved. It would have made no sense for him to actually sign. It would cost him an enormous amount of money. But one of the problems with having that much time is people do have changes of heart.
Uh-oh, what about people that wandering eye?
Right, people do learn about themselves more, and they learn about their situation more. And so, like, I know that, like, this is one of the reasons that I was never calling Kyrie a liar. At no point did I think Kyrie was standing on that court at TD Garden saying, I hope to be here forever, while actually thinking, I know I'm out in July. I think in that moment he meant it.
He meant it.
But, man, this year has not gone according to plan. The Celtics young players have not gone according to plan. Nothing has gone according to plan. And, oh, yeah, both teams in New York have double max available. And LeBron and he reconciled. And things look a lot different in the light of February than they did in October.
What is it going to take for that marriage to happen? Does it depend on if the Celtics can put this all together and start winning? How much do they have to win? What would it take to keep Kyrie in Boston?
No, I don't think Kyrie, not like Nick Wright, totally the opposite, got good intentions. And the reason why is because Nick Wright was out there in the world. All right? He saw the field. He said, I like what I got. I believe my chances are going forward. I can win some championships, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, sure. LeBron-ish. Kyrie's always had a wandering eye. And regardless of how much a person, a team think that can change, it ain't too much different in real life. Kyrie has been looking on the side and has been for a long time. When he requested that trade out of Cleveland, and Nick has been on this, he did not request to go to Boston.
And there is, if we're going to just, I mean, we might as well finish the tortured analogy. There is an element of how you found someone is very often how they leave you. And Kyrie, the Celtics got Kyrie.
Oh, because if he cheated on you, he'll cheat with you.
Okay, sure. There you go. Yes, that would be the analogy.
If he cheated with you, he'll cheat on you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's the analogy I was going to go. I was trying to be a little more delicate than that.
Oh,
but my point was, the way the Celtics got Kyrie Irving was by 2 months after he sat on an NBA Finals podium and talked about how committed he was to playing with LeBron, to growing together, to winning championships with LeBron, he said, I don't want to be here. So, of course, it was on the board that 2 months after committing to the Celtics, saying how much he wants to build with the Celtics, win championships with the Celtics, he was going to say, I don't want to be here. So, to answer your question, I don't think there's anything the Celtics can do that would guarantee he stays. I do think a second-round exit will guarantee he leaves. And a team that's been stuck in fifth place all year in the East, what is the most likely outcome? A second-round exit.
All right, for the sake of us not talking about my relationship now, what we are going to do is go to break. Coming up, why is the Lakers GM comparing LeBron and Tom Brady next on First Things First?
I was going to pitch it to you too, Jenna, but I thought, when I said how many times you've been engaged, I thought old Mike D might come up. I didn't know. I thought we might have a couple different names.
One and a half times.
I knew it. Stop.
Back here, First Things First. Time for us to go viral. FS1's your home for the 143rd Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. Check out Rudy the Bulldog.
Let's go, Rudy.
Destroying the agility course yesterday.
This was fun, man. This is my favorite part of the dog show. Because I don't really understand the, like, oh, his coat is gleaming. But I can understand jumping over some stuff.
Now, this is totally not this breed. They don't have cardio. They don't work out.
No.
Man, they don't like getting hot. But look at my man. He's trying to go in the first round. Check out the weave, the obstacle course. Get over that right there. Check him out. Over that one.
Oh, he's so good.
Watch him when he comes down the home stretch. In and out, homie.
Are you doing play-by-play?
Check him out. In and out. That's my guy. Let's do this. Man, get him a snack, man. Get him a meal. Look at that big head, dude. Man, only a mama can love that thing. Look at that.
That was amazing. That was great. That was really, really well done by
Thickness,
you.
Thickness, man. Oh, I love it. I love it. He's still taking a nap.
Just sweating.
can't sleep for days. And, you know, they pant. My gosh, after that,
you're right about that type of breed. Like, that's not what they're known for.
Remember we had the big bull tried to get after the little bulldog? Forget her. Remember the big bull tried to get after the little bulldog?
Yeah.
We need this bulldog when the big...
Oh, when the longhorn. Oh, the Texas
we need him
steer,
in there.
The
yeah, yeah, we need him in there. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have nightmares about what you just did, Jenna.
I was getting ready to try to say steer, but it didn't come.
Ooh, I got you.
I didn't know if it was going to come out the right way, so I just chilled on it.
Jenna,
you with me, homie?
I know that the goal of television I've heard is to feel so comfortable it's like you're not on TV.
That's my
but
whole
sometimes
raison
you got to remember we are on TV.
Okay, why don't you tell that to your partner?
He wasn't pantomiming when
Jenna asked me today, like, what are you doing here? I said, Jenna, we have a show. Really? Yeah, you have your own show, Jenna.
I was introducing myself.
5 o'clock meeting.
Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. I love these guys. Mm-hmm. Thunder beat the Rockets 117-112 on Saturday. Russell Westbrook had his 9th triple-double in a row. That ties Will Chamberlain's NBA record. CeCe, how impressive is this?
It's impressive. I wish he was shooting better. It was more impressive when we'd seen this a couple of years ago, but Nick has schooled me, man. People have seen it. It's kind of, the novelty of it's kind of worn off and everything. Still having a special, the triple-double will always be special in basketball. Wish he was just shooting a higher percentage from the field.
Right, and you made the good point, C, that last year his three-point percentage was his career average, right around 29%. This year it's 24%, which is unspeakably bad. The reason he won the MVP, yes, no one had averaged a triple-double in the season since Oscar, but he did it while leading the league in scoring. His points are down 10 points per game from that year. What I will always marvel at is the effort he plays with every single possession. It is something should be envied and tried to duplicate because he goes so hard every play.
And he's a better floor leader. He's a better point guard than any other point in his career as far as getting other players involved. And what he did to win Paul George over, that's one of the best things. It's not a stat.
For sure.
But getting Paul George to stay there through free agency was impressive.
His shot's just broken right now.
On to a potential
like
cross-team collaboration.
Only thing uglier than that field goal percentage is that wardrobe.
Magic Johnson said he'd like to work with Ben Simmons to share some big guard secrets. That is, if the Sixers, Lakers, and NBA were all okay with it. Nick, would this be good for Simmons?
Of course it'd be good for Simmons. There aren't many people in the world that could see on the court like Ben Simmons can see playing that position. Mm-hmm. Magic was obviously not only the best big guard ever, he's the best point guard ever of any size. It helps that he's big. I can't imagine this will actually happen for a host of reasons, not the least of which are, if I'm talking about people you've mentored, it's like Larry Fitzgerald, Randy Moss, you also ran a coaching camp. Tell me all the players Magic Johnson's mentored in his career.
Not a whole bunch.
Okay. Yeah. It's not what he's known for.
No, absolutely not. But
business people, yes, mentor them.
Absolutely.
Players, yeah, not quite so much.
But Magic does have the rare thing at 6'9". He played the game and saw the game at a different vision points than other players. I do believe there are certain things that he can share with Ben, but more importantly, Magic struggled with his shot. Magic had to work on his range, and all those things Magic Johnson did. So I do believe that his knowledge, it would help out a young Ben Simmons.
All right, on to the NFL now. The Cowboys have a number of decisions they're going to have to make this offseason, most notably whether or not to extend quarterback Dak Prescott. Prescott said he doesn't want to do a team-friendly deal a la Tom Brady, saying he expects the Cowboys to pay what's deserved. He elaborated, saying, nobody's wife makes as much money as his does either. When Tom Brady isn't the breadwinner in the home, then that's a great problem to have. So in that case, he can do that. He can do his contract however you want to do it. CeCe, what are your thoughts on what Dak had to say?
Well, I don't believe that Tom Brady is where he is in salaries because of his wife. I believe that Tom Brady's been in a partnership with the Patriots for a long, long time. Tom Brady's never been one of the top five quarterbacks paid in the league. Came in, we know about his draft status, when he was drafted and everything, but how Belichick does contracts, how the Crafts want to move forward, and they look at Tom Brady as their son. But from doing contracts, the Crafts rely on Belichick. He manages the books. He manages the cap. And we just have not seen players, especially players that are older players, get guaranteed money, get big signing bonuses, and exorbitant salaries in New England. So for me, it has nothing to do with his wife. I don't think he should have brought it up. Nick, you made a good point of this particularly you believe to be a little bit out of bounds.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about Dak Prescott's contract on football, other quarterbacks. I want to talk about, for a moment here, the most notable part of this, which is him specifically bringing up Tom Brady's wife and saying Tom Brady's not the breadwinner of the household. See, you played 16 years in the league. How many quotes you read in the newspaper or see on television of someone talking about your wife?
None.
How many times did you give a quote mentioning another player's wife?
None.
This was shocking to me.
Why? Is that an emasculating comment?
Oh, to say he's not the breadwinner? Yes. Absolutely.
He's Tom Brady.
Yeah,
you really think that's what would I don't know. As a woman, I'm just surprised
that
that's so
shocking. Listen, maybe this is
Let's talk about Russell Wilson. They don't talk about how much Ciara makes.
Right.
People don't have that. Russell Wilson's one of the highest paid quarterbacks. And his wife's a celebrity. She's making some money. She's not Giselle, but she's making some money. So I think that this right here, you just don't need to do it. And he's not accurate. He can't prove. Nick and I go through this all the time. Nick's like, I don't have to prove it. Certain things you should be able to, not prove, but you should be able to back them up with some concrete evidence. No one can say Tom Brady took that deal because of his wife. And
right.
If you look at New England, how they structured things, there's basically one or two guys. One, Stephon Gilmore, who we got here. He was a first-round pick. He was playing in Buffalo. They signed him as a big free agent. He's one of the few people in New England. He's also a lot younger.
Right.
He's in the prime of his career.
I think he's the only guy on their team that's at the top three paid at his position. I think he's the only guy on the team, unless an offensive guard is. I think he's the only one. It's not how they do business there, but maybe this is a little sexist of me. Maybe it's the lizard brain. I don't know. I'm just telling you how that struck me is, man, what are you doing? We have had pro athletes married to celebrities before. We've had pro athletes married into money before. I've never heard another athlete be like, well, of course he takes a discount. Like, he don't need the money. His wife makes the real money in the family. That I'm telling you this much. And I think I'm a pretty evolved, woke, progressive guy. Man, one of my contemporaries be like, man, Nick don't need the money. Danielle makes the real money in the household. It'd make me mad. I mean, it also wouldn't be true, but it would also, let's say
you got that in there, Nick. Make sure everyone knows.
I don't think it's a manly thing. I just think when you're trying to negotiate your money, you're trying to get the best deal. And Tom Brady's wife has nothing to do with you, your career, and what you're trying to do. And also, Dak, you better be careful because Amari Cooper, he's earned a new contract. He saved your season. So
Zeke's earned a new contract.
Yeah, so Zeke is getting a new contract because of what he's done on the field and what the Los Angeles Rams did for Todd Gurley. So the pie can only be sliced so many times. So be careful when talking about a hometown discount, because you're going to get a discount because of those other players on the team, too. And Jerry Jones knows that you have to be supported in a certain way.
No, I was just going to ask you, because you and your wife are both prominent television personalities.
Correct.
It wouldn't make you mad if someone said, well, Jenna can take a little less money from Fox because Steph's the real breadwinner, and you don't think it'd make her mad if the other way happened?
I think we are adding so much tone to his comment that now we're making it seem like he went out, and the whole point of the comment was to...
To me, it was.
To criticize Tom
Brady.
He said
those quarterback discounts are for one player in the league, the one player in the league whose wife makes big, big money. Other than that,
and he mentioned her.
And he mentioned her. Like, it wasn't... He didn't allude to it.
Does Steph make more money than you?
No. The
NBA
now. And don't insinuate that she does.
See, exactly. Jenna gonna get mad.
Man, if I'd have known Steph was for less, we could have got Steph off in first
Steph
things
out
first.
Here underpaid.
Steph, let me hit
you. Put your life on line, El Chapo trial. What y'all doing?
Yeah. She doing some real work.
Back to the NBA now. The Lakers sit 2.5 games out of the 8th spot in the West after losing to the 76ers yesterday. And losing badly, might I add. So let's set the table now down the stretch. Lakers have 26 games to play themselves into the playoffs. General manager Rob Pelinka thinks they are prepared to do just that. He added, I think early on they were facing a ton of adversity. There were lots of stories being told about fractured relationships. But what did they do? They kind of came together. My hope is our story is a little bit maybe like that, where we're on the outside, but we find a way to get in the playoffs with the skill sets we've added. And then much like Brady did, we let one of the all-time greats, LeBron, take the helm for this team and make some noise. So, Nick, obviously, Rob Pelinka is comparing what the Lakers could do to what the Patriots did do. What do you think of what he had to say? What do you think of the comparison?
That is the exact plan. Get into the playoffs and then see, once LeBron is in playoff mode like we saw last year, how far he can carry the team. Now, getting into the playoffs, though, for the Patriots, obviously, it's a different story if they don't get one of those top two seeds, I believe. It's a different story if they play 3 rounds of the playoffs and they don't have a bye, if they don't have home field advantage up until the AFC Championship game. Just like it's going to be a different story for the Lakers if they get the 8 seed. We have seen LeBron... The last 2 NBA finals, one of them he had Kyrie Irving play the team you would have to play if you have the 8 seed. The Warriors play first NBA finals, average a triple-double. Next NBA finals, 51-99 first game, you go 1-8. So, yeah, you can rely on playoff LeBron if you get the Nuggets in the first round and see what you can do. But none of it's going to matter if they don't get to the playoffs or if they only get the 8 seed. So I get the Pelinka comparison. I think that is the Lakers, since they struck out on Anthony Davis, that is their only path, is to get in and see what LeBron can do. But it's not just getting in. They have to avoid Golden State in the first round.
Yeah. Rob Pelinka, first of all, there's a lot of people that cover the NFL on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, year-round basis. They don't even know what the Patriots do. Okay. They don't even understand the Patriots. So to think that Rob Pelinka is one stop in Boston this year, they get a big comeback victory, that's how they're going to do it? Oh, we're going to take, because we're in Boston. Oh, because they just won. Oh, they just had the parade. Oh, Belichick wins number 6. Oh, Brady wins number 6. What about that coaching staff, the continuity? All these things LeBron does not have. Yeah, LeBron's been to the finals 8, but who else? What other type of help does he have? And like, none. So the similarities as far as Brady and what he is facing and who he could depend on, it's not, LeBron don't have that. Luke Walton could be fired before the playoffs. And he's supposed to be Belichick? So who's supposed to be Kraft? Like, just let's stop, man. You don't know what you're doing. Stop making up stuff. They need to push these last 25 games to try to get the semblance of what they were doing earlier in the season. They need to figure out a rotation. When New England got to the playoffs, Nick, what kind of team were they?
They were a run-dominated, defense-oriented team.
Did they change in those 3 games? Did they change?
What do you mean, did they change?
Was that their one philosophy?
Oh, no. Depending on what they had to do, given who their opponent was, they changed repeatedly.
Like, are the Lakers ready to do that? Well, absolutely
and
not.
Can't.
And no other team in sports can do what New England has done. So let's not try to duplicate something that we've never seen. It's one of the great dynasties, and I'm going to give a lot more respect to it than Rob Pelinka, some first-time general manager trying to figure out one of the greatest systems that we have in all of sports.
And no matter what seed the Lakers get, if LeBron plays like Brady did in the AFC Championship game, yep, they gone.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, what the Patriots have the ability to do, as we saw, win games when their quarterback isn't great or is mm-hmm. only great for moments. Like, the Lakers' only path to success in the postseason
if
is what the Cavs' path was.
If Belichick wasn't concerned about Brady not being great, don't you think he would have dropped back and passed 45 times a game?
Sure.
Of course. He normally would do?
Is there some irony also to the fact that a week ago, Pelinka had this whole team except for LeBron traded, and now he's like, this is the team. We are going to be the Patriots. Well, we're going to bring it all together. Do you believe in LeBron's supporting cast this year more than you do in LeBron's supporting cast when he was in Cleveland?
No one told me this, but Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, their overall inexperience, it did not help get Anthony Davis to get LeBron some help. All right? So their inexperience. People haven't talked about what went wrong with the deal. Well, were the Pelicans really engaged in trying to make a trade? Well, let me tell you what their inexperience. So they're trying to grab, man. They're trying to grab stuff. This is new to them. So for me with the Lakers, I don't know how they're going to finish. But I know they're going to be under a lot of heat and a lot of pressure, so I wouldn't be surprised if they made a number of mistakes coming down the stretch.
And, Jenna, to answer your question, LeBron only had a horrible supporting cast the last year in Cleveland. Like, I wanted the first year it was a good supporting cast, and then Kevin Love got his shoulder ripped out, Kyrie hurt his knee, and they're not there for the finals.
Right.
The second year, those guys all played great. They won a championship. The third year, JR fell off, but Kyrie and Kevin Love were still there, and they were playing offensively at one of the highest levels we've ever seen any team in league history. It was year four when Kevin Love was in and out of the lineup, when Kyrie was gone.
Right.
When
a couple trades.
Right. This Lakers team is a better supporting cast than last year's Cavs. There's no question about that. But
They're in the West.
They're in the West. But they're also a worse supporting cast than the first 3 years when he was with the Cavs, because he had Kyrie every playoff series except for the first finals against the Warriors. So it's better than last year, but it's also a much more difficult road than last year.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, the Celtics got booed off their own floor. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Antoine Walker. We're talking Celtics. It was not a great weekend for them. They blew a 28-point lead Saturday night to the Clippers, causing their fans to boo them off the court. To make matters worse, Kyrie Irving left the game with a knee injury. He's listed as day-to-day, and it seems like the Celtics' success is listed day-to-day as well. Marcus Morris didn't sugarcoat the issue. Take a listen.
It's not fun, man. Like, it's not fun. We're not competing at a high level. You know, even though we're winning, it's still not fun. You know, I don't see the joy in the game. I watch all these other teams on the league, guys up on the bench, they're jumping on the court, they're doing all, you know, other stuff that this look like is they're enjoying, you know, their teammate success, they're enjoying everything, and they're playing together and they're playing to win. And when I look at us, I just see a bunch of individuals. We got to play to win. That's sacrificing playing hard, that's sacrificing, you know, being a better teammate, that's sacrificing whatever it is, you know, we have to put it to the side. No one's getting traded, the trade deadline's over. We compete for a championship, and that's how we got to approach these games. We're going to lose a draw, man. We're going to lose games, but we don't have no attitude. We don't have no toughness. We ain't having fun. You know, it's going to be a long season.
All right, Antoine. I mean, there was Marcus Morris talking about how something has to change if these guys are going to play together, put this together, and then make a good playoff run. What needs to change on this team before the playoffs start?
I don't know if it can change. This needs to start from day one. I think, obviously, they had high expectations, but what was really their expectations as a team? We know they did great last year without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, but it's obviously a lack of leadership in the locker room. You saw Kyrie with his little spat where he went out and called LeBron because he wasn't being a great leader. You have to have people don't understand, to be a good team, you have to have the camaraderie, whether it's going to dinner, or just hanging out. You got to get those guys together. And on this team, you got a lot
of... In the NBA, bro, I think people think you practice more. They think you play... You do play an 82-game schedule, but all that other time becomes more important than the time that you spend on the court, because on the court, you only have five guys. So I saw that Miami team, which you talk about, all the team building, and that's one thing Kyrie doesn't have that LeBron. We have had guys sit here who play with LeBron and say LeBron is the best team building teammate that they have ever seen in the NBA, as far as getting people involved, doing certain things, taking the initiative, stretching their brain, making them do things that they wouldn't ever do. And now you're talking about how important those things are.
If you want to win, and if their goal was to win an NBA championship, because they're 14 games over 500, so they're playing good, decent enough basketball, but obviously they had expectations of probably 60, 65 wins. They were thinking that. That probably was the expectations. Obviously, they're probably not going to get to that. If you look at their roster, they got six guys averaging double figures. Brad Stevens has tried his best to balance the minutes out. Nobody's playing more than 32 minutes. So they've tried their best to balance the minutes out. But I think you got guys with individual agendas. When you look at Terry Rozier, wants a big contract.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
He's getting the less minutes of probably all those guys. Then you got Jaylen Brown, who started off the season, you bring Gordon Haywood back, put him right in the starting lineup where he probably should have came off the bench in the beginning and let him build his way back up. But Brad Stevenson, he played for Brad. That's Brad's guy. He's going to put him in the mix. So it's just a lot of internal things, I think. And then plan-wise, I just think defensively, they're not a very good team defensively. The same team they were last year.
They were a dominant defense last year.
Yes.
I still think
they're always
actually
in the top five, typically one or two.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think they're a pretty good defensive team still, but they are not. Last year, they were the number one ranked defense in basketball. That is what they thrived on, is a defensive identity. I think people have been cautious to say this because we have empathy and we feel for the player. But so much of this comes down to Gordon Hayward. He is taking 26 minutes a night. Those minutes could be distributed elsewhere. Six more minutes for Terry Rozier. 12 more minutes between Tatum and Brown. Like, you could – he's taking 9 field goal attempts a game?
Mm-hmm.
Those – if Gordon Hayward did not come back this year, they would have been better. And that is now maybe long-term they wouldn't have. Maybe he needs to go through this if he's ever going to get back to being an all-star level player. But right now you have a guy who's one of your prime rotation pieces, who's one of the reasons the pieces don't fit as well. Because here's the thing. People need to recognize, and I know you do, they had Kyrie last year for 50-some games. They knew how to play with Kyrie. It was Tatum and Brown.
No. They didn't know how to play with Kyrie. Because Tatum and Jaylen, what they experienced at the end of the season in the playoffs, they were at their absolute best.
Sure.
And Kyrie wasn't there. So the player who they thought, I mean, I know, if I'm Jason Tatum, I spend the offseason working out with all these guys. I spend some time with Kobe. Mm-hmm. Man, let me tell you, my confidence coming into year number two. So the player he thought he was when they started the season was totally different. So even though they were on the court with Kyrie, they were in the locker room with Kyrie, what they thought of themselves was so much higher.
Sure, but I guess my point is maybe I should phrase it like this. Brad Stevens knew what the rotation should be. Because they did a rotation last year with these guys. Now, maybe they still would have been a little upset with, I thought I was going to be here and now I'm here. But the other element of this, just quickly, how much time, energy, oxygen we spend talking about, what did being involved in trade rumors do to the young Lakers? Well, the Celtics aren't dopes. They know that their names were being, when Danny Ainge was talking to Del Demps saying, there'll be a better offer for you this summer. Who do they think it is? Garçon Yabusele? Or is it going to be
their names out there? We had specific names on the Lakers. You're leaving.
But we know that when the Celtics...
They know. Especially when you have a good contract, an aspiring contract.
Right.
You know that those contracts are more advantageous in a trade.
But you know what's different about this situation? Even with Anthony Davis coming up in the free agent market, you got to be cautious of that because you got to the Eastern Conference Finals with the crew you got in place, without Kyrie, without Gordon Hayward. I don't necessarily, you know, Anthony Davis probably gets you over the hump, depending who you got to give up. But those guys, young guys, are seeking money. You got to understand, they want that money first. It's one thing, one, make it to the league, you want to be the best possible player. But once you hit that plateau where you play well, you want to get paid. You don't think Terry Rozier thinking about that my market value is going down?
Yes.
Every game, you don't. Maybe not so much Jason Tatum. He's in his second year. But Jaylen Brown's looking for a contract coming up. You don't think they're looking at Marcus Smart, got $52 million?
You know, right. This is they got a number of problems inside that locker room.
Well, speaking of Gordon Hayward, what do you think the Celtics should do with him? Because I would imagine the conversation wasn't, well, let's sit him because he'll probably get better when we put him in slowly. It was like, get him back out there, right? Like, get this mental thing out of it. Let him just shoot his way out of
the I think that's Brad Stevenson's fault. But Brad Stevenson probably loves him. He's a special player to him. He wants the best for him. He puts him right in there. Probably should have came off the bench to start off. Probably should have had him on a minute restriction early and kind of played his way into the lineup where now he's taking over. Look at DeMarcus Cousins. Obviously, two different injuries, but you could take your time, get back healthy, and fit yourself. They were that good where they could have waited on Gordon Hayward this year. They didn't have to rush him back and put him in the starting lineup.
Every time you have a relationship with a coach and that player's not outstanding, it affects that locker room. And this guy's making money, twice as much money, five times as much money as some of these players. Like, he's been maxed out. Like, he's got his money. So that does affect the locker room. And I know the fact that that's Brad's guy. Oh, they're both from Butler. And these other guys have not gotten paid. Oh, they're not going to say it. But that is one of the things. That's one of the elephants in the room when you start talking about all these deals. And I believe that Kyrie, based on some of his comments, Kyrie would like to see Gordon Hayward healthy.
Of course, right?
Because they signed him in the offseason. Him and Kyrie thought him and Gordon were going to take over the East. And now with LeBron being gone and them being in the fourth or fifth spot, this is not where organization.
We all picked them one.
Yeah. Almost everybody. The real quick, your point about the young guys and getting paid, it cannot be overstated. It's one thing to ask Chris Bosh. We want you to sacrifice. He's on a max deal. It's another thing to ask Kevin Love. We want you to sacrifice. He's on a max deal. Klay Thompson. Klay said, I'm going to get my shots no matter what. But Draymond Green was on for his salary scale at the time, a max deal for what he could get. Sacrifice. It's another thing. Terry Rozier is a great example. Jaylen Brown as well. Two guys who Jason Tatum is going to get the restricted free agent max when he comes up. Jaylen Brown might not. Terry Rozier is not going to.
Right.
And for those guys to say, this is, and by the way, Boston, I got no expectation of you taking care of me. We saw IT. And so that is an enormous part of this in my mind.
With Antoine Walker, big showdown Sunday between the Lakers and the Sixers. It turned out to be a big blowout Sunday between the Lakers and the Sixers. Joel Embiid led the way with 37 points as the Sixers ran away with this 143-120. It's a lot of points. Lakers are now back to 500, 2.5 out of the playoff picture. All right, Antoine, you concerned that this Lakers team, this is the team we're going to have now down the stretch, that this team might miss the playoffs?
I'm not concerned because they got the best player. You look at the bottom half of who's fighting to get in the playoffs, the best player is LeBron James. And I think that's where the separation comes at. When you think it's about Sacramento, they're obviously their four games over 500. They'll be interesting there at the end. Dallas seems like they're going to be competitive. In San Antonio, I think will still stand at seventh spot. And then I think the Clippers eventually are going to
fall back.
So I think LeBron James being the best player in that bottom half of that group, they're going to be the playoff team to get in.
Yeah, Twan. But that's cool. In a normal year, man, we was in the East. Last 8 years, we straight. Number eight, as long as we get in, Nick can say it. I'm not worried.
No.
I'm not worried about the guy. I'm not worried.
But, no, I think it's be great for them to get in. I think it'll give Magic and LeBron a chance to see what they got. Because they was about to ship out for everybody.
Not when they get out the broom in the first series against Golden State.
But still, that's the best team. You want to be measured against the best team.
Even LeBron James, as much pride as he's got, and in those finals, man, LeBron would like to win a couple games. Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka is...
You don't think they can get one in L.A.?
No, I don't. I think they'll get swept. Now, I think success this year is younger players keep developing and win a series or miss Golden State. So, right. For me, that would be a success going into...
I don't know if they miss Golden State.
So Antoine's point,
they barely get in, and then they got Golden State, and you get a sample size of what your young guys can do.
So listen, can they get into the playoffs even if they don't play great? The answer is yes. Sacramento's ahead of them. Here's Sacramento four of their next five: at Denver, at Golden State, at OKC, home for Milwaukee. So Sacramento about to hit a rough stretch. We know the Clippers just don't want to make the playoffs.
No, they beat Boston.
And they're probably upset about it.
Yeah,
like, I absolutely. Mean, like, listen, here's why they don't want to make the playoffs. They want to keep their pick. They want to keep their pick, and it goes to Boston, actually, if the Clippers make the playoffs. So can the Lakers, if they just play okay, a couple games over 500, get to the 8 line? Yes. But I agree with Chris, and I said I'm going to focus on this. Can they get to the 7 seed? Can they climb all the way, which would mean not only jumping the Kings and the Clippers, but getting ahead of the Spurs or someone else falling off?
I disagree. I think if you make it, you get a real look at what you got. I don't care what seed you are. You ain't winning the first round, whether you at the 7th spot or the 8th spot.
Oh, that's where I disagree with you. I think if they get to the 7th,
they can't beat Denver.
Okay, so that's...
They can't beat Denver. I don't think they can beat Denver. It's the same. This is different. Denver is much better than a lot of people think. They don't have the big names, but they play hard. Mm-hmm. They have a system. They have a underrated center who's probably one of the best players in this league. They would have trouble with them in a 7-game series. And you got to remember, they start on the road.
Of course.
Now, they can win a couple games against Denver now if you want them to win a couple games. But if you make the playoffs with this young group, because you finna trade all of them. You was finna trade everybody. Somebody can play with LeBron. We know LeBron needs some veteran guys, some shooters on his team for him to be successful. But eventually, you got to take a hard look at these guys. Ingram, Kuzma, to see who's going to be a part of this. Now, I'd rather look at them in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Now, something he's talking about, Denver. Denver right now, 27 games. They're 23-4 at home. They got the best home record in the NBA. So, you know, to give some credibility to what you're saying, no, Denver is a better matchup than Golden State. But if LeBron doesn't get hurt, they're looking at being the 5 seed, the 6 seed. That's where they really should have been.
Oh, they
but
win
those,
a series then.
Those 18 and 20 games, though, that LeBron missed, those are gone. And what they can't do, they can't afford another injury coming down the stretch, or they could miss the playoffs.
So if you look at what this means for LeBron, does LeBron's legacy in any way take a hit if they don't make the playoffs, get bounced in the first round, maybe make it past the first round? Does it matter, really, when we look at LeBron?
Matters to me they make the playoffs. Listen, I've said for however long that I've been in media that one of the knocks on Kobe is he missed the playoffs in his prime. And then the next 2 years got bounced in the first round in the playoffs in his prime. Now, he wasn't in year 16, but I can't simultaneously say LeBron's extended his prime as long as anybody, and then if they miss the playoffs, say this one don't count. So, yeah, it is important that they make the playoffs. I disagree with Antoine. I do not think Denver is equipped to deal with a playoff LeBron James. I'll tell you, if they get to the 7 line and Denver's there at the 2, I will pick the Lakers to win that series, assuming LeBron doesn't get injured in game 82. But people need to know the math here. They got 10 losses maximum they can play with. The team they're chasing, San Antonio. See, you remember that third game of the year? LeBron hits the 3 to put it in overtime against San Antonio and then misses those 2 free throws. Patty Mills comes down, hits the game winner. That's the reason San Antonio won the season series. 3-1. So a same record as San Antonio, San Antonio gets the seed ahead of you. So they don't. Everything matters, and they now, like, they play at Atlanta on Tuesday. It's going to sound weird. That's a must-win game if you're talking about the Lakers winning a playoff series.
And, Jenna, LeBron's legacy is on the line because we're going to start getting into a lot of firsts. First major injury, had him out 18 games. Not going to make All-NBA after how many in a row,
first, Nick? Probably not going to make first-team All-NBA after more than 10 straight.
Right now,
if he recharges his battery for All-Star break, he goes tonight this week, recharges his battery, you come back. Second half of the season, he's healthy now. He feels 100%. He can go on a run.
Oh, I agree.
He can go on a run. That's why I believe they're going to make the playoffs. I believe he'll go on a run to make sure they get in the playoffs because he'll think about his legacy. He'll think about getting in. And then, obviously, the Lakers won 35 games last year. They got 28 wins now. You want to add a plus 10 to that. They probably get to 45 if he plays really, really
45
well.
45 would be 17-9 down the stretch. I think 16-10 is what they're going to have a shot at the 7 seed. By the way, I agree with you. I think LeBron's going to play great post-All-Star break. I think they are going to make the playoffs. Your question was, what happens if they don't? And by the way, if they lose Tuesday night at Atlanta, the last game leading into the All-Star break, you lose to the damn Hawks, and all of a sudden you're below 500 at the All-Star break, then them missing the playoffs becomes a real conversation, no matter the Kings' schedule, no matter the Clippers trying to tank and they have a...
Then Magic may be calling back Dale Dempsey taking that deal.
Well, yeah, it's too late. Oh, but you know who Magic what might be calling is Luke Walton. And seeing what's going on with Luke. But I don't think that's going
to
be happening.
We'll find him. Probably doesn't have to. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.